This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
En Cox, estamos un paso adelante. Como el muchacho que ya sabe la orden de tu cafecito incluso antes de pedirlo.
Hey, José, café con leche sin lactosa, un toque de vainilla templadito sin azúcar.
En Cox también nos adelantamos a lo que necesitas. Por eso el precio de tu plan no subirá por 3 años. Y nuestra seguridad avanzada protegerá tu red de amenazas antes de que pasen. Cox, un paso adelante. José, llamada de tu jefe en 3, 2, 1. Al menos 500 megabits por segundo de velocidad y Cox Unlimited Mobile. Impuestos y cargos no incluidos en garantía de precio. Velocidad de datos móviles reducida tras usar 20 gigas al mes.
It's the dictionary.
Hello, word nerds. Welcome to the dictionary. Hello, everybody. What's up with your faces? This is what's up with my face. Also, this is what's up with my shirt. It's hard to see. It's a Weird Al Dare to Be Stupid shirt. You gotta go look at it. Go to YouTube. Look at my shirt. Please look at my shirt and then subscribe to my channel. Let's see. Can you please rate and review? Can you do that? Yes, you can, and you will. Go ahead and do that. That would make the algorithms and myself very happy. It would also make me very happy if you emailed me, dictionarypod@gmail.com. Go ahead, just email me whatever you want. Something that you can email me about is a joke. If you got a joke through the end of the alphabet, go ahead and email it to me. You can also email me a theme song if you want to write your own, say, like 15-second theme song for this show. You can email me the audio file. You can call the Google Voice number and leave a message, and then I'm going to put it in an episode unless you say not to. What else? If you would like to get these episodes extremely early, then you need to give me $1 a month on Patreon. The link is in the show notes. You can also buy some merchandise if you like this show so much. Buy some merchandise so much. What else is there? Jonah and Tom made my theme songs. And I feel like I'm forgetting more and more of this pluggy section every time I do this. Whatever, it's fine. Let's talk about the words. We've got some interesting words in this episode. Interesting, I put in these air quotes. Okay, the first word is eudiometer. Eudiometer. E-U-D-I-O-M-E-T-E-R. Noun from 1777. This is an instrument for the volumetric measurement and analysis of gases. So, how much volume is the gas taking up? How fast does it fill up a space? Because a gas is going to expand to fill up the space that it is in. If there are cracks in the space, then it's going to go through the cracks and then find another space to fill up. So I don't know what they're doing. It's something about studying the volumetric measurement. You're measuring the volume of the gas. You're analyzing. You're analyzing the gas. Eudiometric. Eudiometric. That is an adjective. And eudiometrically is an adverb. The eudiometer is studying the gases eudiometrically. This is an interesting one. Where does this word come from? We need to know. Let's see. From Italian, eudiometro, which is from Greek eudia, which means fair weather. That is from the U plus dia, which means weather, akin to the Latin dies, which means day, plus the Italian metro, which means meter, and also the Greek word metron, which means measure. So you're measuring the fair weather? I don't get that. The air? The air is a gas? That one's a little bit weird. Well, what's the U, the EU prefix? What does that mean again? Well, easily, good. I don't know. What's the weather today? It's pretty good. Yeah. I don't got anything else. Maybe we need to look at a picture of one of these udiometers. You know what? I'm just going to do a little quick check right now because I just need to see what things look like. It looks like a beaker with some tubes and some other stuff. Looks kind of simple when you really look at it. You could probably make one of these at home, maybe. Let's go on to another word, but first I gotta make a sound effect, which is gonna be... The next word is eugenic. We'll get into it. The sound effect and the word don't go hand in hand. Eugenic is an adjective from 1883. Okay, get ready. If you've never heard of this before, if you're a regular listener and you don't know this, you might get frustrated. Okay, number one, relating to or fitted for the production of good offspring. And that's a subjective word, good offspring. What's good? Well, it's going to get, we're going to get, yeah. Number two, of or relating to eugenics. Eugenically is an adverb. And we do have etymology here. I mean, we're going to have some more related words. This word is from the Greek word eugenes, which means well-born. Also from, that's from the U, E-U prefix plus genes, which means born. It's all, you know, that genesis, the creation, the born, when a thing is born. There's more at the suffix gen. So, yeah, it's well-born. That's what it means. What's well-born? Is the thing born the way you want it to be? Is it good offspring? Well, what else does the dictionary have to say about this word or these related words? We have next eugenicist. Eugenicist, noun from circa 1909. This is a student or advocate of eugenics. And I think we're going to get a lot. Let's go on to the next one. Eugenics, noun from 1883. A science, I wonder if people still like to use the word science there, a science that deals with the improvement of hereditary qualities of a race or breed. There's an example. Improvements would be by control of human mating. You see where we're going with this? Do you see why you might be frustrated? Some of you might be frustrated. Most of you might be frustrated. I know I am. So basically, what this is saying, this is the idea, essentially, that in the people who believe this, the eugenicist believes this, is an advocate for this, they believe that some races are better than others. And to keep the good qualities of certain races, then the people in that race need to keep on breeding so more people have those good qualities, quote-unquote good qualities, because, of course, the other races that have quote-unquote bad qualities, which, of course, we know is just factually insane. They don't want to mix the races. Why would you want to mix the races? Oh, I don't know, because you make more interesting and cool people that way? I don't know. Maybe, possibly. Yeah, so clearly, I think this is ridiculous, and I will put a link in the show notes, because I'm sure there's a ton of interesting, more flabbergasting information there. But this is a thing that some people believe. And, you know, I think there's a lot of examples throughout history that I couldn't even tell you about that are all based in this idea. Whether or not they were using the word eugenics, I don't know, but some of them for sure probably were. What else? I don't know. I don't really want to give it any more time than it is due. So let's go. The next word is eugenist. Eugenist. And it is a noun from 1908. And the synonym is eugenicist, which came about 1 year later. So then I guess when eugenicist came around, people were like, we love eugenicist way better. And then eugenist was like, but I came first and I think that I should be the word. And then eugenicist is like, nope, I'm the cooler word. People like me better. Next is eugenol or eugenol. And I'm worried if this is going to be related. Let's see. Eugenol, noun from 1886. Oh, good, it's different. This is a colorless, aromatic liquid phenol, C10H12O2, found especially in clove oil and used commercially in flavors and perfumes and in dentistry as an analgesic or analgesic, whatever way you want to say that word that doesn't make you giggle or does make you giggle. This is from the new Latin word, eugenia, which is the genus of some tropical trees. So that must be where they're getting this clove oil from. It smells so nice and it tastes so nice. I gotta smell it twice. Okay, that's eugenol. Next is eugeosyncline. Eugeosyncline. Yep, that's it. Let's see. Eugeosyncline. Eugeosyncline. For some reason, it doesn't sound like it. That's how it should go, but it does. Noun from 1942. A narrow, rapidly subsiding geosyncline, usually with volcanic materials mingled with clastic sediments. And this is the hardest word to ever say. Eugeosynclinal. That's an adjective. For some reason, it was like I was second guessing every single thing I did. So it's I don't know what a geosyncline is, but it is one of those that is subsiding quickly, and it's narrow, and it's got volcanic materials mingled with other things. So yeah, it must be related to volcanoes or something. I don't know. I guess in the G's, we'll learn about a geosyncline. Next is euglena. 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 Noun from circa 1889. This is any of a genus, Euglena, of green freshwater flagellates, often classified as an algae or alga, algae. Lots of ways to say these words. Flagellates, I think I said that word right. I'm guessing that those are little things with tails, maybe, probably. Green freshwater flagellates, often classified. So it's like, they're like an algae, like a seaweed maybe kind of thing. They're green. And yeah, flagellates, maybe they're little things that are swimming around. But if they're plants, are they swimming? Euglena. Well, this word is from its genus name, which is from the EU prefix plus the Greek word gleni, which means eyeball or socket of a joint. Socket of a joint. Socky it to me. So when your shoulder is in the joint, it can move all the way around. It's like a ball socket joint. And I guess maybe the ball that goes in the socket is also like an eyeball. Can you imagine if your eyeball was in your shoulder joint? And why? Okay, well, now we have to look up a picture of these euglenas because, you know, why? What are? Do they look like eyeballs? Did they? Oh, they have an eyeball. Well, they have something that looks like an eyeball, at least. Well, they look kind of like sort of squatty worms. And yeah, I could see, I can imagine these all just swimming around. And they've got, they look like a single-celled organism. Yeah, they got the mitochondria and the chloroplasts, the stigma. They got a flagellum. They got a little tail hanging off the end. Photoreceptors, contractile vacuoles, Golgi apparatus, endoplasmic reticulum, stored carbohydrate, and the nucleus and the nucleolus. And that's the part that looks like an eyeball. It's this big, like, red-orange thing. And they were like, it's a plant, maybe, but it also looks like it's looking at me. So I'm going to name it after an eyeball. That's it for the euglenas. Okay. Next is euglenoid. This is a noun from 1885. Any of a taxon of varied flagellates as euglena that are typically green or colorless, stigma-bearing, solitary microorganisms with one or two flagella emerging from a well-defined gullet. And wow, lots of stuff there that few things I didn't know about. What's this well-defined gullet? I have a vague memory of some other word, at least one word, that also was related to this gullet thing, and I don't know what exactly we're talking about. But it bears stigmas. It's got some stigmas. I don't know where the stigma is, but oh, that's the eye. Ooh, wait a minute. That says eye spot, but that's different than the nucleus. That's a whole different thing. What's this picture say? There are all these little balls at the bottom by the flagellum, and those are called stigmas. The plot thickens. Okay, so yeah, there's just all these euglenas. There's other things that are euglenoids that are similar. The taxon is euglenoidina. Or euglenophyta. I think you should, if you're going to have a baby, you should name your baby euglenoidina. Okay. And euglenoid is also an adjective. Sorry if there was a weird sound. It was my shoe squeaking on the thing. Okay. Next is euglenoid movement. Two words. This is when all the euglenoids come together and they're like, we need more rights for the euglenoids. And that's the movement. This is a noun from 1940. Writhing, usually non-progressive, protoplasmic movement of plastic-bodied euglenoid flagellates. Writhing, usually non-progressive, protoplasmic movement of plastic-bodied euglenoid flagellates. I just gotta move on from there. Next is euglobulin. I think this episode might win the award for the best-sounding words. Euglobulin, noun from 1904. A simple protein that does not dissolve in pure water. And I just feel like there is so much more information that probably could have been put there, but there's no space, there's no room. I mean, if you know what a simple protein is, then maybe that's enough for you. Maybe you're like, oh, well, I know a simple protein, and most of them dissolve in pure water, Spencer guesses. But this one, this euglobulin does not dissolve in pure water. So clearly we have called it a euglobulin. Okay. Next is, oh yes, this is a fun word to say, euhemerism. Euhemerism. You can also just say euhemerism. noun from 1846. This is interpretation of myths and traditional accounts of historical persons and events. Euhemerist or euhemerist, that is a noun. The person who is interpreting these myths. What else are they doing? They are, or they're interpreting these traditional accounts of historical people or events. So these things happen. There's these mythical things or these actual people and events. And then over time, people are talking about it and maybe writing stories about it and putting on plays about it, making musicals and things. And, but you know, the meaning changes over time maybe, or people interpret the meanings in different way. Maybe they're metaphorical, but people view those metaphors in different way. And so this person, this euhemerist, is doing some euhemerism, and they're interpreting it the way that they would like to interpret it. Let's see. Well, I was thinking that there would be some more interesting etymology. It is interesting. I just thought it would be different. This is from euhemerus, who was a 4th century BC Greek mythographer. So my guess is that this person, euhemerus, they were interpreting and studying all of the Greek mythology things from even before the 4th century BC. That was a long time ago, but they go back even further. They're studying stuff even further behind than them, further in the past. So after that, people were like, hey, I want to interpret this stuff just in my way. I want to be like euhemerists, so I will be a euhemerist. Euhemeristic, that is an adjective. Next is eukaryote, or eukaryote. You can spell it with a K or a C, like we learned in the previous episode, right? Somewhere around there is, yep, there's eukaryote. Okay, this eukaryote word is a noun from 1943. Any of a domain, eukarya, that's the name of the domain, or a higher taxonic group, eukaryota, above the kingdom that includes organisms composed of one or more cells containing visibly evident nuclei and organelles. It says compare to, I think these would be other domains or kingdoms or something, archaea or archaea, bacterium, and prokaryote. Prokaryote. So let's see, eukaryotic, that is an adjective. So what are the things about these eukaryotes? Let's see. They're above the kingdom. Well, isn't it like the plant kingdom, the animal kingdom, the fungi kingdom? And then so these above that, bigger categories. We got all these other things that are different. They have one or more cells, and they have a visible nuclei or organelle. These euglenas probably are eukaryotes. They have the same prefix in their name, and I believe that I can see, yes, I'm seeing actual photos. You can see the nuclei and the organelles and all the stuff that goes inside of them. So maybe we need to, let's just look up pictures. What are the eukaryotes? You know, it's just stuff and cells sometimes. Oh, here's a fun picture. Prokaryotes versus eukaryotes. Well, they both got a cell membrane. They both got ribosomes. There's some differences, but the way it's all organized inside of the body is a little bit different. They have different pieces, different structures, organelles, I guess you'd call those. They got different stuff. Obviously eukaryotes are big thing in this planet. So we got to put a link in the show notes for big things on this planet. So let's put a link for eukaryotes into the show notes. Oh, a link for eukaryotes in the show notes. Not much. Yeah, archaea, bacterium, prokaryotes. Those are other sort of like similar domains, I guess, just like eukaryotes. The name is from the New Latin Eukaryotes, or Eukaryotes, which is proposed subdivision of protists. I guess that's what that means. Or it is a proposed subdivision of protists. That's really kind of it. That's it. That's all I can give you. Next is Eulachon. Eulachon or Eulachon. Eulachon. Noun from 1807. The synonym is candlefish. And it's a synonym. It must be in the book, and I can't remember what a candlefish looks like. So we gotta go look it up. I don't know. It's, I don't want to see one burning. Is it a candlefish? Because literally you could make it into a candle because it has so much oil in it. You could just use it as a candle while you're camping. Is that what it is? Eulachon. Yeah, that's what I guess that's the more scientific name for this candlefish. Let's see. It is a Chinook jargon word. That's where this is from. Eulachon. Probably from the lower Chinook word, which I cannot pronounce because it's got characters that I am not familiar with. But it's probably also pronounced similar to Eulachon. And yeah, that's it. So it has nothing to do with the EU prefix. When it got into English, they were just like, well, it's got a U in this Chinook jargon. We're going to put an E as well. Blah, 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 blah. Eulogize is next with an S, British variation of eulogize with a Z, which is coming up. Blah, 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 blah. Eulogist, noun from 1808. One who eulogizes is a eulogist. Blah, 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 blah. Eulogium is next. Eulogium, noun from 1621. The synonym is eulogy, which will be in the next episode. But I guess eulogium, is that like the older way? Let's see, what's the year? No, it's a newer word, eulogium. I don't know, for some reason eulogy just stuck and eulogium just sounds weird. The last word in this episode is eulogize. Eulogize. Transitive verb from 1810. To speak or write in high praise of, just of whatever you're giving high praise to, that's what it is of. The synonym is extol, E-X-T-O-L, which we'll get to eventually in the E's. So usually when we eulogize, it is about somebody who is dead. You write a eulogy, which again we'll learn in the next episode. But yeah, it's usually about somebody who's dead. At that time, when somebody is dead, that's the most appropriate time that you should give them high praise. Why would you do it when they're alive so they can hear it? Wait until they're dead, and then you can give them high praise amongst all their family and friends. That's the best time. You're speaking it, or you're writing it, or both. Maybe you wrote it, and then you speak it out loud in front of people, and you're very nervous, and maybe you're crying. And I've done this a bit. And so, yeah, you are eulogizing. But I think that we need to do more of this when people are alive. Before they go, before you miss your chance, tell them how you feel. Tell them how much they have meant to you. Tell them how great they are, all the wonderful things that they have done. Remind them. Validate their feelings. Make them feel good. Why wait until they're dead? That's what I say. All right, let's pick a word of the episode. We had today eudiometer, eugenic, eugenicist, eugenics, eugenist, eugenol, eugeosyncline, euglena, euglenoid movement, euglobulin, euhemerism, yes, eukaryote, eulachon, eulogize, eulogist, eulogium, and eulogize. Well, I'm definitely not going to pick the eugenics words. I have no strong feelings about these, you know, sort of single-celled things, so I don't know if I'm going to pick those. Let's see, was there anything else? You know, a simple protein that does not dissolve in pure water, those are great, just great. I don't know, I mean, I'm kind of tempted to pick Eulogize, or maybe Eulogium, because it is a eulogy. Yeah, sure, let's do that. Eulogium, Eulogium. You better eulogize people when they're alive in their eulogium. Oh, that's so wonderful, so wonderful. Hey, now I would like to tell you about a movie that I watched, and I believe the next one is Madam Web. Just yesterday we watched... Oh, I'm recording this on March 11th at 3:08 p.m., the Oscars were yesterday, and it's always a fun time. Good things, bad things, people won, people lost. I always disagree with many of them, but that's just the way it goes. I'm gonna make up my own lists. No, I probably won't. But there were a couple of jokes at the expense of Madam Web, and my frustration with this movie is just that I think that they could have done a really good job with it. They could have made a really, really good, fun movie, but they didn't... I don't want to say they didn't try hard enough, because, you know, when you make a movie, there's a lot of work. A lot of people, a lot of work goes into these things, especially these big budget effects-heavy movies and stuff. But I feel like they should have taken some passes at the writing ahead of time before they went into production. And, you know, these big production companies, especially like these superhero kinds of things, they just want to churn them out. They just want to get them out as fast as possible. But, you know, so that's one thing. They could have spent more time on the script and made something really good. But also, don't do that. Don't just push a movie through when it is helmed by four great women. Movies that are helmed by women are already in the negative. They're already hurting because people don't choose to go see them for whatever stupid reason. And it automatically, just the fact that they're in the front of the camera, that they're the leads, people already don't care about them, won't go see them, they're going to badmouth them, whatever. But then you just push it out real fast and don't really care? That's kind of what I felt about this movie. It's just like, I just get it out. Well, it's getting doubly hurt because of all that stuff, because it's helmed by women and because they didn't try hard enough with the script. And so I just think that they could have done a better job with that. That's my opinion. I'm probably not in the minority about that. All right, that's the end of the episode. Thank you very much for listening, watching, possibly. And until next time, this is Spencer Dispensing Information. Goodbye.
How Did This Not Get Made is a podcast all about the films and TV shows that never got made. In this podcast, we uncover the history of these intellectual properties and walk you through the plot of these unmade scripts to determine if they would have been great or awful. Here's just a few other titles that we've covered. The Beatles' Lord of the Rings, James Cameron's Spider-Man, Guillermo del Toro's Haunted Mansion, Star Wars' Duel of the Fates, Superman Lives starring Nicolas Cage, James Gunn's R-rated Scooby-Doo, and Alejandro Jodorowsky's Dune, just to name a few. Episodes of How Did This Not Get Made can be found wherever you get your podcasts.